Ladies and gentlemen,
you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
Another episode of I Want Your Flex as Week 7 is in the books. Mike Harmon wraps up with the Rams and Bears. More happening, I guess, outside the lines of the game in being interest when it comes to this contest. Rams put a bow on Week 7 with a 24-10 victory over your hometown Bears. But it's basically the conversations that Nick Foles is having with Brian Griese and Matt Nagy that are really drawing the headlines from what was an uneventful Monday Night Football matchup.
Great opportunity in the land of Chicago on the morning talkers, I'm sure. Brian Griese talking about the conversation pregame with, you know, the meetings that they have with quarterbacks, you know, to inform their broadcast. Probably an off-the-record comment that, well, didn't stay off the record regarding the offensive line play and some of the intricacies of Matt Nagy's play calling. As a guy who watches every down of the Bears, I try to watch it for every team, but certainly for the hometown Bears, the special nature of Matt Nagy's play calling, it's not evident to me, but certainly in terms of trying to get a pass playoff, we see Nick Foles struggling to work behind that offensive line. No run game and myopia at times with Allen Robinson. So a bit of a mess and a lot of explaining to do coming off a miserable loss.
It's funny because Allen Robinson seems to be the only Bear worth playing in fantasy right now. But you go to the other side of the sidelines and you see the Rams and you think of the Rams of years past when you could start Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp and expect to have one of those guys or two of those guys or three of those guys have really good games, over 100 yards receiving, probably from one of the receivers. Now you look at this Rams team and you're not necessarily sure on what receiver is going to see the action. Cooper Kupp, while you think that he's still the favorite of Jared Goff, it's not necessarily the same offense. Robert Woods had a quiet night with just three catches and 22 yards. In fact, Woods had more yards rushing than he did actually receiving. So Rams get a win, they're happy about that, but when it comes to fantasy, Bears have a good defense, no doubt about it, but still I don't think that anything was cleared up with the Rams, except maybe that, you know, again, Daryl Henderson is going to be the guy who's going to get the most carries.
Should be the guy. Ran hard, ran angry, 15 for 64 on the night, two catches, 13 yards. Brown also took advantage of his goal line work, 10 carries, 57 yards, and the score. So two-headed monster, but the identity would appear to be more in trying to establish the ground game, not really working the ball downfield. A lot of yak. I would liken it to the way Breeze and the Saints operate, right? 10, 15-yard routes maybe, and then trying to throw a guy open to maybe get some yak rolling in. We know the tight ends are always going to be involved. No Higbee for this game, but Everett found the end zone. You had Munt. I just wanted to say his name. Three catches, 47 yards for him. Goff, 219-2, better than you would expect on the whole for fantasy purposes. Look, it doesn't get you into the winner's circle, but a better day than I would have given him. And what was curious was the offense was motoring, right? Good tempo, good open routes, and then they got really conservative the second half. Seemed like they could have kept the pressure up and didn't, whether that's not wanting to put more on tape or they were gassed themselves, as you would have thought the Bears defense was trying to chase them around. So it's going to be difficult to really look to either of these teams for fantasy heroes, except in spot plays, it would seem.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the Rams in the near future, they've got the Dolphins in Week 8. We know that because Tua's debut for Miami.
Yeah,
I think that there will be opportunities there. They'll have a bye, and then they have Seattle in Week 10, and there definitely will be opportunities there. There's not a defense worse than the National Football League. The problem just becomes where In previous years, all those Rams were playable guys. This year, I don't think that's the case, even though you could see Robert Woods with a 7-catch, 160-yard, 2-touchdown game. Because if you have Cooper Kupp on your team, that could be the game where he has 3 catches and 22 yards. It's the guessing game, and you hope you hit. But that's the only trouble that I see with the Rams, even with this favorable matchup, is you still can get burned because it may be the other guy that ends up having the monster day and not your guy.
Yeah, I'd rather go to the casinos in Vegas,
sure,
or here in California and try my luck with getting that right, because as we see, it's tough proposition. Woods with a bit of a groin injury, so the bye week coming up after the week 8 game against Miami will be good timing for him. But yeah, to your point, you're looking at the only guy that was consistent when healthy is Higbee. If you're looking for just, all right, that's going to be my tight end play. The wide receivers, running backs, I'm guessing Henderson's the guy, but you saw Brown was the guy with the touchdown. So
yeah,
it's a tough, and they still keep saying they want to get Akers involved. So when does that happen? And if it does, it's absolute fantasy chaos. So stick to the daily fantasy leagues and your pick'ems.
Let's go to the 3-point conversion recap from our last podcast, where we hit on a couple of things. I'll start it off because I mentioned Antonio Brown, and I said stay away from Antonio Brown. He is going to be a Buccaneer, signing his 1-year deal. We just don't have an outcome on that game. Swift Trucking, I went for a what can Brown do for you, Swift Trucking, a FedEx theme, these shippers, carriers across the country, so I went with that theme. DeAndre Swift did get into the end zone, but just didn't have the usage that you thought he would get. Falcons did a good job controlling the clock. And again, it's Adrian Peterson with more of the carries, 11 as opposed to 9 for Swift. Swift did have 4 catches, a modest day coming off of his big day that he had the previous week. But I will say that Washington came through. I told you that the Cowboys were in trouble. Not that you disagreed with me, but I figured that the Cowboys would have a long day on Sunday in the nation's capital with that Washington front, and Washington came through just like FedEx would, and we saw what happened to the Cowboys. We'll talk about them later in the podcast, but I did convert on that 3-point conversion.
Nicely done. I had a big bet on Josh Allen. He was my number one ranked quarterback, obviously, against the New York Football Jets. The misery continued. We're now at an official streak when it comes to Josh Allen and terrible play. But I'm taking my win off Herbert, and what he had to put up for the day. Number one on the board with his point total against Jacksonville. So I'm just taking that. I'm spiking the ball and moving on.
We have to start calling anytime you love Josh Allen, you're living in Allentown. Can we do that?
I like that. Sure. Especially, I mean, one of my favorite albums of all time.
Hey. I am not a big Billy Joel fan. I am not and I know people love him, and they'll see him every year at Madison Square Garden or Central Park and do his concert, but I am not. We Didn't Start the Fire annoys me. Are you a fan of that song?
No.
Okay, good, no. Good.
I celebrate a lot of the rest of his catalog, but that certainly is not one that makes for me. There's one called Lullaby that always gets me.
Sure. I'm just not as much of a fanatic.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, you go to 70s Joel, and obviously you have the joke from Step Brothers with 80s Joel and Horatio Sands losing his mind going, no, we only do 80s Joel. Maybe you don't like Uptown Girl and all those songs. I don't know. But to me, when you go back to The Stranger and some of those other albums, I mean, that's really where you get me.
In those highlight videos where you would look back on a season, sort of a one shining moment sort of theme, This Is the Time is the song that I always liked when you're looking back on the highlights of your great season. And it's very 80s, but I do like that song by Billy Joel. We'll move this on. We'll leave the Billy Joel conversation and look back
for
at the
longest
week that
time
was.
We will.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Oh, Lee DeLapp, our executive producer, was waiting in the wings to drop a Billy Joel pun as well. We just don't have a microphone for him right now. By the way, you could get Lee DeLapp on Twitter at Lee Delap. You can get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. And if you want to send a tweet to the page, if you have any fantasy questions, go to at I Want Your Flex. It's a place that we can check them out as well. So let's look back at week 7. I mentioned the Seahawks defense, entertaining game on Sunday night. Up until, in my case, when the Seahawks lost the game, that stunk. The point being with this matchup fantasy-wise is, continuing with the theme, when you have bad defenses in the NFL, you got to play guys that are against that team. And the Seahawks have the worst defense right now in NFL history through 6 games when it comes to yards allowed. No one has given up more yards. The Arizona Cardinals were a big beneficiary of that. You saw Kyler Murray have a spectacular night. But it's just amazing to me on just how bad some of these defenses are. And now if you're Seattle and you've got the 49ers coming to town, if I'm someone playing fantasy, and I'll get to the specifics in a bit, but I'm picking up as many 49ers as I can because Seattle has just shown they have no desire to stop anybody, and they didn't on Sunday night.
No, and that's just it. Shootout after shootout. And as we look across the NFL, there's a lot of bad defenses. Even in going back to the Bears-Rams game for a moment, here's two of your better defenses, and certainly the Bears, a top 10 scoring defense, and we've seen what they've done throughout the year. Some terrible tackling in the first half exhibited there, and I think that's emblematic of what we've seen through the first 7 weeks of the season. You got a lot of arm tackles or guys going for the big stick and not landing properly, so all they're doing is pinballing the guy forward, and he's falling ahead for another 7 yards, or maybe he keeps his feet and keeps going. So certainly Seattle and Dallas are our two poster children for this season as far as bad defenses.
The fallout from that game, both starting running backs came down with injuries and are going to miss time. Kenyon Drake, high ankle sprain, is going to be out for a bit for Arizona, and that really could usher in the Chase Edmonds era. Drake was actually emotional when he got hurt. I think that he thought the worst when it came to his ankle injury, and you have to remember this guy is playing on a transition tag, so he has free agency coming up and really hadn't done anything in the first 6 games of the season, so to have that injury hurt him. But you could see Chase Edmonds taking that spot over. You're still going to have, by the way, Kyler Murray stealing goal line touches and vulturing those touchdowns, so that's not going to change. The Seattle side of things, a little trickier because Carlos Hyde's got a bit of a hamstring, according to Pete Carroll. Travis Homer was a bit dinged up, so they had to go to the rookie DJ Dallas. Not that Homer would be a play, but if you're looking for someone to replace Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde isn't the sure bet just because of the hamstring, but if he is healthy enough, he would be the guy getting the touches, obviously.
Hey, CJ ProSize just got cut. Can he come back?
Oh, no. No more of that. No, that is done. They held on to that thing for so long. My goodness. There is a better chance that Marshawn Lynch comes back again than CJ ProSize would come back. Oh,
did
my
you like
goodness.
That? I found him out on the wire on the newsreel a little bit earlier. But, yeah, it's certainly not cleared up. Look, it's a lot of it still run off Russell Wilson's arm, as we've seen, right? It's Metcalf. It's Tyler Lockett. We'll get to him in a little bit. Chase Edmonds was one of the guys on the sleeper, not just because of Seattle, but also because oftentimes, to cite Seinfeld, people hated the Drake. Right?
Yes.
He's still among the leading rushers in the game, but he's not been a threat except one or two games in terms of red zone efficiency. But Edmonds has a good receiver out of the backfield. That's where he made his hay here. 7 catches, 87 yards to give him, along with 58 rushing yards, a 21-point performance, good enough for 5th amongst running backs this week. So, you know, they'll keep moving, and Kyler Murray's on pace for 1,000 rushing yards. So just always remember that in the back of your mind. He's going to tuck and run as he goes, as you mentioned, Dan. So two tough situations, two high-flying, high-scoring teams. And now it's just rolling the dice. We talked about handcuffs a lot early in the season. Arizona's got the clear one. Seattle, you thought you did, but now it's clouded. But Hyde only owned it about 10% of leagues. I was in the unfortunate circumstance because of injuries and needing someone to start. I had to cut him 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, there's would-be starter.
Well, there was an opportunity, too, where Chris Carson got dinged up, and you thought maybe Carlos Hyde was going to play. I believe it was the Miami game, and Carson ended up coming back and ended up playing that next week. So a lot of the Hyde pickups became useless at that point. You know, we joke about CJ Procise, but number one, it may not be far off because that could be a possibility. And we're not telling you to pick up CJ Procise. The point that I'm making, though, is – for Seattle's running backs this week, for Arizona's running backs for this week, for any team, the 49ers and their dinged up backfield, you can't add anybody anymore because of the COVID timelines that you have for these games. You got to have guys in the building, and if you sign them too late and you don't get them in soon enough, they're not going to be eligible to play. So that's actually the one good thing fantasy-wise is you know the guys that are in the building, and by Tuesday, they're not going to be able to add anybody and put them in, make them active for the next week. So that's at least one good thing fantasy-wise. The Dallas Cowboys would probably like to get rid of everyone if they could, including the coaching staff. But after that embarrassment against Washington, Mike, I know that you have to play Ezekiel Elliott, and we don't know Andy Dalton's status after his concussion that he has, but are most Cowboys benchable now because of where they are without Dak?
Yeah, I think we're at a point where I don't think any of them are automatic plays, including Ezekiel Elliott. You watched that game on Sunday. Who was the better running back on the field? It was Antonio Tony Pollard.
I thought you meant the other sidelines.
But on the other side, certainly Gibson by a mile.
Yeah,
but
and J.D. McKissick, for that matter. Yeah,
yeah, McKissick as a runner and receiver, you know, a little muted in his numbers this week. But, yeah, he's a guy that I'd rather have that side of the equation. But Tony Pollard's the better running back for what they have right now. They've got a bad offensive line. He's running like his hair is on fire when they get him the ball as a runner or receiver. Zeke Elliott's afraid, or seems afraid, right, that his ball security is a problem and running behind a shoddy offensive line. And we know he doesn't want anything to do with blitz pickup. He's not even pretending half the time. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Tony Pollard start taking a little more of the role, paid Zeke.
Yeah, and that surprised me because that was actually one of Zeke's strengths was pass protection. Even when he just came into the league, he was a guy you couldn't take off the field because he would be able to block for you and is actually one of the better blocking backs. And funny, I played CeeDee Lamb this past week, zero catches, targeted five times, didn't bring in any of the passes, some just flat out drops, had a carry for a yard, and that was about it. You take his maybe upside, throw it out the window. Michael Gallup, throw it out the window. If DiNucci is your quarterback, none of them are. I'm playing no one against the Eagles on Sunday night.
No, I mean, you saw Gallup with, what did he have, two targets, I think? And Amari Cooper for long stretches is invisible. I mean, the only guy you half trust is the safety valve of Dalton Schultz. Just the desperation, just get the ball out of my hands. But now it's time to go trade for Ryan Fitzpatrick or someone to lead your team for a while. That hit on Andy Dalton was scary stuff, watching that live and in living color. But for fantasy purposes, they're done. They're done. They're all benchable.
You know, and your point about the quarterback is I don't even think it's Andy Dalton's fault. They don't block anyone. They can't block anyone. And the the Washington football team, have a better defensive line than people would want to think. They can really get after it. And for the next 5 or 10 years in the NFC East, that's going to be something the three other teams are going to have to deal with. But trading for a quarterback, you hear a lot of Sam Darnold rumors, that sort of thing. It's like, doesn't matter. The quarterback's going to get crushed anyway, whoever's back there. So it doesn't matter if it's, Andy Dalton, Ben DiNucci, or Ben Seaver from Growing Pains. They're going to get crushed.
it really does circle back to that opening topic of the Bears and whatever Nick Foles may or may not have told Brian Greasy. You can say the same thing for the Cowboys, right? The injuries on that offensive line, it's you got no chance. I mean, Andy Dalton should be operating from a 9-yard shotgun like he's going to punt the ball the way you're at. Bring out the long snapper and give him the extra step or two. Because, I mean, you got to have happy feet, and you're trying to get the ball out well ahead of breaks. There's no timing. There's no continuity. And Andy Dalton had no prayer And obviously we know the big hit that ended his day. But before that, there's no comfort in the pocket. Like, did you ever see him set his feet to throw the ball? No, it was half of them were jump passes just to get the thing out of there.
I would love if the Cowboys came out on first down in punt formation, where you then had to guess if they were actually going to throw or punt on first down, because the guy would, you would have Andy Dalton or Ben DiNucci taking the snap from 15 yards back, and you'd have to decipher what is the better play.
It's like you were playing street football again, Dan.
Yeah, right.
Kick.
Yeah, one banana, two banana. Speaking of quarterbacks and their health, we are going to be watching one quarterback in Week 8 who's really never had too much experience or hasn't had hardly any experience taking an NFL snap, but it may have been the reason why we waited this long to see him, and that would be Tua Tagovailoa of the Miami Dolphins. Health always the reason when we said, why, when is Tua going to play? When are the Dolphins going to make a change? And we wanted to know when the switch was going to happen, and kind of surprised everyone that it happened after Week 6 after the Dolphins approved a 3-3 with that win over the Jets, and surprising to everyone, including Ryan Fitzpatrick. But the time is now for Tua, and he's going to get the start against the Rams. Would you pick up Tua if he was available in a league entering Week 8, and not only just for the matchup against the Rams, Mike, but for the rest of the season? Is Tua someone you'd want to stash on your team?
Yeah, I'll roster him. There's going to be some opportunities. Hey, they got to play the Jets. The Bills have shown some cracks of late, and we know the Patriots aren't what the Patriots once were. Not like you're going to run roughshod and suddenly put up 38 on them, but you're going to be able to have your success. I think with Tua, when you look at Williams and you look at Devontae Parker, assuming he comes back in full health coming out of the bye, you've got guys out of the backfield that can catch the ball. Gaskin's been serviceable, and you still have Howard and Breida there. And Gesicki hasn't quite been the beast he was to start the season, but who's always the young quarterback's best friend? Your tight end.
Tight end.
So he's a guy that's probably been kicked off to the waiver wire, so might have some value to be had there. But I think I'll take a run with Tua. I'm still ticked off that Fitzpatrick got deposed, but I'll save that 15-minute rant for another time.
I have Devontae Parker on my team. I was hoping for his purposes that Fitzpatrick would get more run because I thought he was more valuable. However, I am now intrigued seeing the great success of Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow as rookie quarterbacks. Just wondering if Tua can do the same and maybe not match their starts because they're having great starts to the season, but at least sure, be a viable play and keep the level of those other Dolphins up. I would take a flyer as well on him. I would put him on my team, especially if you're in a not favorable quarterback position. Maybe you have Deshaun Watson as your starting quarterback, or maybe you've got Josh Allen as your starting quarterback. And as you said, which has now become a thing, maybe it's worth just taking a flyer on Tua right now. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I think part of it, Dan, is just the philosophical, right? Of originally it was a Week 11 bye, and maybe that was the plan that gets expedited because of the Week 7 switch. So here we are, and that was the plan. So as long as he's healthy, let's go see what the kid has. I'd love to see them open up the playbook and see what he can do downfield. Just I would like it to not be a conservative approach, because right now that division is there to go and try to win. So that's where the intrigue to all of this happens from the straight football perspective.
It's Lawabj in Cleveland. Life without Odell Beckham Jr. is what I'm talking about. But the Browns broke out without him against Cincinnati. Raiders come to town in Week 8. But now you see Baker Mayfield with his 21 straight completions, only stopped by a spike in that game against Cincinnati. So that ended up stopping the streak. We heard Kevin Stefanski on Monday say that Nick Chubb could be back following the team's bye in Week 9 from his injury. So the Browns, things are looking up after that win against Cincinnati. Fantasy-wise, without Odell Beckham Jr., how are things looking for the Browns?
You know what, though? I'm going to let you lead. I heard the discussion you had with George Reister on Sunday afternoon. I was driving around as the word came down that there was an injury, and I thought your analysis was dead on, and I agree 100%. So I want you to take full credit for what you had to say about Baker Mayfield's running of that offense.
Yeah, I think that it's the, again, the pressure for Baker Mayfield to get the ball to Odell Beckham Jr. is no longer there. You saw the targets that were spread around the team. I mean, David Njoku wanted to be traded, and what do you know? He scores a touchdown against Cincinnati. You know, like there was enough to go around for everyone. Five touchdowns. Rashard Higgins had over 100 yards receiving. Jarvis Landry is a bit dinged up, as he has been all season. Still a reliable target. 5 for 48. The pressure that comes off of Baker Mayfield to throw the ball to Odell Beckham Jr. is just immense. And the OBJ thing to me has been, I felt that Eli Manning had enough cachet with the Super Bowl wins that he had and the mentality that he had to allow Odell Beckham Jr. to accumulate the stats that he did. Eli would make throws that I'm not sure 90% of the quarterbacks in the National Football League would be willing to make. But then you put Odell Beckham Jr. on the other side of that, and his talent, the way that it is he can make those plays. And Odell's first three seasons in the National Football League were off the charts when it comes to receiving. Now, considering in his first 3 years, when we talk about receivers acclimating, there's no one who acclimated quicker than OBJ did in the National Football League when he came in his rookie year. He was hurt a little bit at the beginning of that rookie year, but really was great. But Eli Manning was the guy to me that was able to make those throws and could make those throws and was really the only option in New York. So those stats built up. With the Cleveland now, Baker Mayfield can't make those throws. Not physically, what I'm saying. He just can't do it within the system and where he is at the quarterback and where he is in his career. So now to have that pressure off, I don't think that it was a coincidence at all that he had 21 straight completions when Odell Beckham Jr. was off the field.
I think you start going through your progressions more, to your point. You start looking off, you know, that number one spot perhaps a bit more than you do. Because what do we keep saying? Oh, how important it is to get him in early. Look what they did against Dallas. They're calling end arounds and everything. And, you know, it's good play calling. Take advantage of a bad defense and make it work. But, you know, that works against terrible defenses. And, well, Cincinnati's isn't good. But it's the idea of going forward. How do you keep the offense churning? Once Nick Chubb comes back, it's pretty clear that's what your focus is, right? On Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and then spread the ball around, try to play a little bit of defense while you try to get these guys healthy for the second half of the season in that back seven. But for Baker Mayfield, made all the throws. You know, everybody continued their narratives into the new week of, if you don't like Baker Mayfield, no matter what he's going to do, you're never going to like Baker Mayfield. He played a fantastic game, took advantage of what was there, and I think it showed signs, and we'll see the progression. But when you add a Higgins to the mix, and you got Hunt as a good receiver out of the backfield, you got guys that you can deploy. And Njoku will be happy. Maybe he still gets traded if Cooper comes back from his injury fast.
Yeah.
But you've got a guy, at least you know there's a physical mismatch to be had, because you've got to pay attention if he starts really distributing the ball well. So I think it bodes well for the Cleveland offense overall. Sorry to see OBJ go. You know, he's one of the more interesting characters in the game, and when he's right and things are clicking, it's fun as hell. But if Baker's going to have to try to force the ball to him 8 to 12 times a game, what does that mean? The rest of the offense suffers.
You know how much I hate the Michigan Wolverines. Just can't stand them. But when you see Michigan and you watch them play, I will say this. The one player offensively that I always thought was a problem and would be a problem for Ohio State when they played was Donovan Peoples-Jones. And so now he's in the NFL and ends up having three catches, ends up scoring. That is a guy that it's not going to replace Odell Beckham Jr., but I think that you could see more from him. He, to me, is a guy that's going to be in the NFL for 10 to 12 years and is going to make plays. Maybe this is his opportunity to step up. I don't know how great it would be to the point that we're talking about of now Baker being able to spread it around and get the ball to tight ends and stuff like that. But you're also going to see, I think, an emergence from a guy like him. I've always thought that he was a really, really good football player, and it showed against Cincinnati in week 7.
Well, I think this is the curiosity, right? With the COVID-19, a lot of leagues, I know yours didn't, Dan, but a lot of leagues adding IR spots for injured players, COVID-related players, and just generally adding more depth to benches. This is where I'm looking at a Higgins, or I'm looking at him to and deeper down that depth chart to say, okay, in my 19th slot, maybe Peoples Jones is the guy that I'll throw in, right? And maybe he doesn't elevate to my starting lineup. I don't have enough bye week catastrophes or injuries, and his target numbers don't ascend. But you know what? I'd rather have that guy. It's the old philosophy I preach here all the time. I'd rather have that guy sitting on my bench and rotting away there than coming into someone else's lineup and beating me with a big day.
Oh, let's get to our predictions that we hit on and, of course, our
epic fail.
Yes, epic fails. I had a mixed bag on my gimme one reasons because I did hit for the simple fact that my give me one reason to start a guy outscored my give me one reason to bench a guy. So I was happy with that. Curtis Samuel would have given you 17.3 points for the Carolina Panthers in your fantasy team from his effort against the Saints on Sunday. Got into the end zone. And listen, you guys need to vouch for me, Mike and Lee. I told you guys off air that I said I was going to say DJ Moore, but I felt it was more of an obvious pick that DJ Moore would have started anyway. So I wanted to go with a deeper dive. Samuel gave me a little bit, not as much as DJ Moore would have, but still, I'll take a win on that. But because I took a win on that, I'm going to take the loss on Melvin Gordon. Philip Lindsay got hurt for Denver, so Gordon ended up having 68 yards, did get in the end zone, had a couple of receptions as well, so would have given you some points. But I'm going to say I went 1-1 in the give me one reasons for week 7.
Now, the Samuel's a great pick. You're trying to find value, and DJ Moore's a guy you're always going to start. Samuel's going to be one of those. All right, give me one of these four. Samuel, blah, 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 right? So you picked the one of the four, and he found the end zone. So celebratory dance for you.
Cha-ching.
Nicely done.
Let's get to your hits, and I don't think there were a lot of epic fails, honestly, because I know you hit on Herbert. You're giving me that look. But go ahead, give me your hits and your epic fails.
Yeah, this is one where I really judge myself harshly, right? You make bold predictions, and you're guaranteed to find a couple that come back to bite you. On the hits, obviously Herbert. Massive day for him. Kareem Hunt, I had in my top five. Well, he finished eighth, but still 19 points at the jump, hitting 100 total yards plus the touchdown. One of the ninjas was Chase Edmonds. Not the way you want it to happen in terms of guys getting hurt, but you take them as they come. Todd Gurley with the inadvertent touchdown really took it over, finishing fourth on the week. I had him third for the week. He finished fourth, 63 yards, two scores. That's a whole psychological thing that he's going to have to deal with for a long, long time there in Atlanta. But anything is guaranteed to go wrong right now when it comes to that. The Kyler Murray pick, Baker Mayfield, we talked about quite a bit. And then Derrick Henry, he found the end zone, but he finished 15th on the week. So he was our cautionary tale of guys that were normally, hey, you know, absolutely huge. But for this week, make sure you're maximizing other positions because facing that Steelers defense, and what a crazy game that was. He found the end zone to save you, but it could have been even uglier. On the misses, already mentioned Josh Allen. Yeah, he had 368 total yards, 307 in the air, 61 on the ground, but that gives him 20th amongst quarterbacks this week. Cam Newton, thought we'd get some running effort out of him. Figured he would be a little muted in the passing side, but to be benched, three interceptions, 35th. Mike Davis was my number two running back. Yeah, that's not good for anybody. 12 rushing yards, five catches, 24 yards. Good for 30th. And I mentioned Kenny Golladay. Yeah, he went over the 100 mark, but he was still 23rd on the week for wide receivers. Good enough for a starting position, but not so great. Stephon Diggs was in my top five. Yeah, 6 for 48. He was 47th among wide receivers. Will Fuller was 39th. And then I'm going to give myself a big whiff because in my rankings, Tyler Lockett I had as a mid WR2. And as you well know, because the back-to-back weeks, he'd scored a total of 14 points, which meant I don't know what I'm getting out of him. And instead, we get the hat trick. We get 200 yards.
I think it was 2 weeks ago, or actually it was 4 weeks ago, that I tried to convince everybody that Tyler Lockett was still Russell Wilson's favorite target. And then I had to admit after the Vikings game that, all right, in those situations, Russell Wilson looks for DK Metcalf. And what happens on Sunday night, Tyler Lockett emerges again. So it tells me just stick with your feelings. Don't be swayed by the one-week things. Not that DK Metcalf was a one-week thing, but it's 1A and 1B in C. Seattle, and that's where you've got. You had Lockett with an amazing, amazing game, but still proud of what you hit on, Mike, because it's Justin Herbert was magnificent. You had Murray, you had Wilson, you went along with that. Kenny Galladay's got to get his butt in the end zone at some point as well. Let's go to the celebrity selections because, well, it's one of our favorite times of the show.
Even celebrities have fantasies.
Two chicks at the same time, man.
Who better to set your starting lineup than the stars themselves?
Hey, what's going on? It's Nick Lachey.
Hi, this is Daryl Hall.
And this is John Oates.
This is Snoop Deagle Double G.
Hi, this is Bob Eubanks from the Newlywed Game.
They rack 'em, we rank 'em. It's Celebrity Selections.
Our celebrity for week 7 was a member of the United States men's national team, former professional soccer player, Oguchi Onyewu was our celebrity picker. You can find him on Twitter at Oguchi and Wayu 5. And Oguchi, Mike, got bit by the injury bug because he put in his lineup in time for our episode that was going to launch on Friday morning. At that point, we had no idea that Aaron Jones was going to be a scratch for the Green Bay Packers. Ended up being the case, dealing with a calf strain. And so Aaron Jones ended up not playing, was one of the players that's Oguchi put in his starting lineup. So he had Josh Allen, Aaron Jones, and George Kittle. You mentioned Josh Allen's stat line. George Kittle ended up having 5 catches for 55 yards. So in the end, because of the goose egg from Aaron Jones, Oguchi and Wayu comes in at 31.6 points for week 6. It's tough. And we could have given him Jamal Williams' numbers, which would have been like 21.4 points. You would have finished with 53, but we got to go with the lineup. So Oguchi and Yewu with the 31.6 with only 2 players playing in our celebrity selections.
Well, now, to be fair, Dan, a lot of folks would have said, hey, you need to put Dylan in the lineup pregame.
That's true.
Right? Yeah, that was the big debate.
Let's dive into waiver wire. Moving on from our celebrities, because week 8 in the National Football League, we'll have the Cardinals, Texans, Jaguars, and the Washington football team with byes. We both talked about Tua time, and it's time for Tua, so go ahead and roster him. And I'll also mention that, to your point, Chase Edmonds probably should have been rostered, but for some reason, if he's not in your league, maybe people just weren't paying attention. You're definitely going to want to pick up Chase Edmonds. But who else are we looking for at the waiver wire in week 8?
Well, we got to look at P. Ryan for the New York football Jets. 55 total yards on 13 touches and a touchdown. Look, they got to move away from Frank Gore. And you saw that he runs with a little bit of violence.
Sure.
Young guy getting to the outside, could catch the ball out of the backfield. Going up against, a solid team in the Buffalo defense. Some cracks of late, but he's the heir apparent, right? Le'Veon Bell is gone, and Frank Gore is just riding out the string. Did I mention that we've watched Frank Gore's kid play in college this year? moving on from that, the Carlos Hyde thing is certainly there. He's only rostered in 10%. Richard Rodgers and Jalen Reagor of the Eagles, those are two guys to look at. Why? Dallas is on the table, but for Rodgers, he's the only healthy guy you really got going. Reagor's coming back off injury, so the expectation is that you'll be able to get some sort of production out of him. with DeSean Jackson getting hurt once again, an opportunity. Still waiting on Alshon Jeffrey as well. Bye week, so this one's a long-term play, is you're looking at Logan Thomas of Washington, 4 for 60 and a score against Dallas, but he has scored in back-to-back weeks, so a little bit of an opportunity there. Going back to San Francisco, we were talking about their running back situation. Jeff Wilson was the number one running back scorer for fantasy purposes in week 7, but ankle injury. Tevin Coleman comes back from injury and expected to play. So he and Jamichael Hasty probably fighting for touches this week going forward. You got Irv Smith for some help out of the Minnesota position. Back-to-back weeks where he's caught 4 balls on 5 targets, 64 and 55 yards, so take some opportunity. And then we still don't know what's going on in New Orleans, so Traquan Smith being one of the few healthy guys running amok, 4 for 4, 54 yards. Obviously, the way Drew Brees distributes the ball, you're going to have some muted efforts, but opportunity is all I can promise.
The 49ers situation bears monitoring because you mentioned Tevin Coleman, and Kyle Shanahan even mentioned it after their win against New England that they were just giving Jerick McKinnon kind of a week off. And so Jeff Wilson ends up having that 3 touchdown effort, but then gets hurt. And now you're saying, wow, Kyle Shanahan is a freaking genius. Tevin Coleman, because he's not necessarily guaranteed yet to come back off of IR, but there is a possibility he could practice this week and no more against that Seattle defense. So monitor that 49ers situation. So if Coleman and McKinnon are available, people that you may want to jump on. Nelson Agholor got 9 targets for the Raiders. And I know that Henry Ruggs is the hot name, but I still think a veteran wide receiver is nice to throw to. I think that Cleveland's going to have more of an opportunity maybe to try to control the clock against the Raiders than they did against the Bengals. But I would also look at Nelson Agholor. Just why not try to ride a hot hand if you're looking for a wide receiver, if maybe you've got DeAndre Hopkins on bye or Will Fuller or someone like that. Maybe Nelson Agholor keeps the streak going with his 9 catches that he had against the Buccaneers.
Yeah, as we were talking about, you know, with Cleveland, Higgins on the other side is 6 for 110. But with Agholor, like, health was not his friend during the end of his run back in Philly. And we look at him here in Vegas. You know, Ruggs is the deep guy. That's it, right? He's, 29 yards per catch or something like that that he was averaging. Yeah. So what does that tell you? That's just a throw it up or scheme it out to where you may get 1 or 2 pops a game. And maybe you're lucky against a bad defense that'll expand, or you're getting buried, so you've got to keep chucking it. With Agholor, he's a guy that can run the full tree. So as long as he's healthy, certainly worth a look-see.
Yeah, and I think I said 9 catches, 9 targets is 9 targets. What I meant. 9 sure. targets, 5 catches for Agholor, but still was over 100 and got into the end zone and tied Darren Waller for the high end targets for the Raiders, who again have the Browns coming up in week 8. All right, Thursday night football. This is an interesting matchup because I think that the Falcons haven't lived up to expectations, which is obvious, while the Panthers have fully succeeded expectations in an NFC South matchup. Christian McCaffrey was able to get on the practice field on Monday, but still not likely to go on Thursday night, so you may want to wait that out. Panthers have a really late bye this year, but you could expect McCaffrey back in week 9. I'm not mad at anybody in this matchup, Mike, and I really like Teddy Bridgewater in this game for Carolina. So if you've got, I'm not saying play everyone, but you could convince me to play anybody on Carolina and anybody on Atlanta, and I'd be good with it for Thursday night football.
Yeah, I think there's points to be had in this game, as you mentioned. Maybe a nice bounce back for Mike Davis, so he doesn't make me look dumb 2 weeks in a row. But Todd Gurley, he's scored, what, in 5 of 7 games, right? I mean, you've got opportunity, and maybe this one he won't be falling into the end zone accidentally. Good for fantasy owners, bad for the rest of the world as far as those Atlanta Falcons fans. But we talked about Samuel and DJ Moore, opportunities there. Teddy Bridgewater's a guy who's quietly, he's a top 5 in terms of passing yards right now. Yeah. He's number five in the league, believe it or not. Robbie Anderson, number two. He's over 640 receiving yards. So opportunities downfield here against Atlanta, certainly. Matt Ryan, he's got three guys that you can look at when you talk about Ridley, Julio Jones, and Mr. Gage. He's been targeted frequently. May have some muted efforts in there, but as we know, their defense isn't very good. So Matt Ryan always has to have some extra ice available for the shoulder.
I'm going to make a prediction. The Saints beat the Panthers in week 7, 27-24. I'm going to predict it's the second straight week the Panthers play a 27-24 game. There's my prediction.
Are they winning this one, though?
I'm just going to leave it at that. I'll just leave it. Okay. You know, the Falcons are interesting because I watched a decent amount of that Lions game. And watching them, they got turnovers against Minnesota, and they were able to cash in, and it was kind of a no contest. But to see Matt Ryan and the Falcons, they're very deliberate. They're not chucking the ball 50 yards downfield like they used to. It was chunk after chunk taking up time, keeping the opposing offense off the field. I'm wondering if that's going to carry over in Carolina, but it just sets up to me like a 27-24 game. But watch Atlanta. It's not necessarily the high-flying team that went to the Super Bowl a few years ago, even though a lot of the pieces are the same. I felt that they were more reeled in against Detroit, and I think that was conscious to keep their defense off the field. But that's what we've got for Thursday Night Football, Falcons and Panthers.
Fun matchup. Wish you could flex it out to Sunday. So if we're going to have a Sunday game, I don't want to watch the Cowboys. I'm sorry.
Did you catch my tweet on the Sunday night game?
I said, you want to get rid of it altogether.
I said, I tweeted. I said that the NFL should flex the Cowboys and Eagles to Wednesday at 3 a.m. Eastern time.
I like that.
Yeah, that was, hey.
No, I'm going to go find that and like it right now.
Let's get to the three-point conversion to wrap this episode up. I'm going to just continue, and I'll take it. I say roll the dice with Teddy B. He actually, this may sound crazy. You mentioned his yardage, which is something that we've looked out. He may be a better option this week than Patrick Mahomes. You mentioned the Jets game. With them being a 21-point favorite, the Chiefs' moves this year are all about getting back to the Super Bowl. Going back, Mahomes, a pretty subdued game in the snow in Denver. If they get up big, I think that the Chiefs try to get Le'Veon Bell his revenge and that they put this baby on cruise control. So roll the dice with Teddy B. If, you know, I'm not saying bench Patrick Mahomes, but I think that there's a chance that he'll have a better week. And plus, you've got Kyler Murray and Deshaun Watson on buys already. Take a flyer on Tua, something we touched on earlier in the podcast and touched on last week. And I'm going to say get your A game on when it comes to pickups. Nelson Aguilar, as we mentioned, from the Raiders, but also Brandon Ayuk of the 49ers because they're going against the Seahawks. We talked about the injuries that San Francisco has. There are plays to be had, so grab the rookie out of Arizona State if you can.
Yeah, an injury to Deebo Samuel.
Gets back in
the lineup and right once again, a hamstring injury. All right, so we talked a lot about the Thursday game, so we'll gauge where we're at. Because it's week 8, so give me Russell Gage in as a number 3 wide receiver. We're going to find the keys to the handcuffs. Why? Because there's so many injuries and bye weeks. If you go through the rosters and depth charts and find the number 2 options, make sure that you're covered because this year has, frankly, it sucked in terms of running back health. You're going to need that help eventually. Don't let someone else siphon that second running back on a depth chart away from you. And 3, it's time to trim the fat. We've hit that point, Dan. I think we'll probably hammer it more in the next couple of weeks. But there's just guys I don't want any part of anymore. I'm selling my shares. So whether you're trading them or just saying, beat it, I got T.Y. Hilton. See ya. Andrew Luck ain't walking through that door. I got Devin Singletary. Zach Moss averaged 7 yards a carry. Your time is done. And then Captain Kirk with his 11 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. Good for 24th among quarterbacks through the first 7 weeks. See ya. I'm taking you to the tractor beam and sending you off into space.
Are you looking for Cousins subs? That, do you guys, have you guys ever had a cousin sub? It's a sub. See, Lee's looking at me.
I like that.
It's a Midwest sort of thing. It's the Wisconsin thing as well. There it is. Three-point conversion from Mike. Three-point conversion from me. And that puts a bow on week 7 as we look ahead to week 8. Get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. You can get our executive producer, Lee DeLapp, on Twitter at Lee DeLapp. And you can find us on the show Twitter page as well at I Want Your Flex. Thanks to Lee Mayock. Thanks to Gucci and Ye Wu for his celebrity selections. We'll have another celebrity for you coming up in our new episode that drops on Friday. Enjoy Thursday Night Football, and we'll get you prepped for Week 8. Talk to you then.